Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Youngstown proper.
Holy cats.
What?
Nothing. A couple things happened. One, somebody is completely blue. And then one of the screens fell down and hit my feet.
Oh.
I just wasn't prepared for any of it, John.
No, I understand. That's awkward. All right. Here we go. I think we got this all straightened out. Here's what we got coming up on the show this evening. There was an article on, what was it? It was on the ChristianPost.com, and it had to do with basically Christians kind of whining, like, when will this be over? I had it up, and then I lost it. Hold on, let me see if I can find it real quick. It was by Matt Moore, who does a lot of opinion pieces for the Christian Post, and it was called Christians Prepare for Lifelong War. And here's the opening. It says, when will it end? This question pours endlessly into my email box. And I immediately right there, I thought, yeah, people do ask that stuff all the time. It could be a multiple things. I think he's writing more on the effects of or the temptations of sin in people's lives. But, like, you kind of get that from Christians in general. It's like, hey, man, we're having to fight the culture wars. When will it end? And I have some thoughts on it, but I thought we'd talk about a little bit about his article and see if he kind of strikes the right note and what should our reaction be to kind of this constant pressure that I think folks are feeling. So we'll hit up that article. There was another article. Hold on, let me see if I can dig this one up too. The Triple X Church guys. There was an article that said three things about porn that you won't hear in church. Any guesses? Any guesses on what these three things are?
They sell your credit card information.
So you're specifically
that
going with...
That would not be something talked about in church.
Pornography, yeah. Websites.
Oh, right. Do people actually pay for it on legit paper? You know what I'm saying? It just seems as a logical transaction. It's foolish.
Yeah, okay. All right. That's it?
Well, I haven't thought about it very much, Ben.
Yeah.
Three things. Okay.
Yeah, I got nothing.
All right, we'll hit up those three.
Well, what do you want? Me and Boova come in here and be like, yeah, we've been thinking about porn all week, and here's what we think the deal is?
Wouldn't that be a problem?
No, I don't expect you to say, the proclivities of what are in the porn. I'm just saying, what are some things that you think that the church is not talking about pornography that they probably should?
Well, one, most of you are doing it.
Yeah, I was going to say, most dudes are struggling with it. In some form or another.
Okay, there we go.
Up the leadership chain all the way.
Yeah, no, that's true. In fact, there have been multiple studies that have bore out that pastors are really no different when it comes to the amount of people in the congregation that are looking at pornography. And frankly, the church is not any different than the rest of the world.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just tend to hide it a little bit. And certainly not better. They're just not in, here's the deal, they're just not in mixed company where people are asking them about it. Where people believe that it's not a moral issue, they tend to talk about it openly. But where you believe that it is a moral issue and you're hiding it, then no one actually talks about it. And then you don't make progress on something that you actually should be talking about openly because it is a problem. So we'll see if that shows up in the article. We also have some advice on Dear Life for the Path. Mike, is any previews this week or... We'll see what happens.
I was kind of thrown off base by that porn question, and I haven't even looked to see what's happening. I'm sure it's deplorable, Ben.
No, I understand.
Here's what we're going to do. I need you to fill in for about, 5-10 seconds why I act like I already knew what was up.
No, I don't think there's any. We don't really have to go in any type of preview if you don't have one available.
I'm guessing someone is stuck in some kind of social awkward situation and has no idea how to get out. And the base of our advice is going to be, hey, just go and talk to them.
Yeah.
Okay, now hold on.
That seems to be the generality.
There's a lady that she's an Anglo woman, and she's using Spanish, and she fears she may be out of line for using the Spanish because she is not Spanish.
Did you just say Anglo woman?
That's how she described herself.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I am what around here is called parentheses Anglo. Oh. Does anybody actually call you that? Like, where are those? Where's that Anglo at?
Yeah, you know.
That seems racist.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, can we give up? That is, I mean, the Saxons have been gone for a long time, right? Like, Saxony has not been a country. I mean, I don't know their specific demise, but I feel like it's been a long time.
I'm a descendant of a Germanic tribe is probably the best way to put it.
But is that really a distinction we need to keep moving around with?
I think it's socially acceptable to just say white, isn't it?
I had this come
I'm
up
a white guy.
This week. One of my kids was acting particularly stubborn, you know, and then someone's like, "Well, that makes sense because you're part Dutch." I'm like, "Now hold on a minute. Like, maybe I don't understand character traits or the human experience as a whole, but like, I mean, you really feel like the Dutch are noted to be the most stubborn people ever, and you've carried it over a train ride, a boat ride, and 15 parents." To equal now, you're just a hair stubborn on occasion because you part Dutch?
Oh, that must be the Dutch in him.
I mean, that don't make any sense to me. I've had this discussion with a couple of folks who are like, well, you know, I have a proclivity to, you know, certain addictions or certain lifestyles or this way because my whole family's that way. And I'm like, well, I mean, some of that is nature and some of that is nurture, but like,
right.
I'm not going to say that you don't have like a bent as a family structure, you know, to addict in one way or act a certain way. But like, that dog only get big when you feed it. So,
yeah.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, you know, bad stuff or whatever. I was born with this and this. And I'm like, yeah, but still, like, you recognize the fact that it does run in your family and you keep shoveling it lettuce and meat and you're like, why is it getting worse? My family was always this way. Well, no, I don't think it was.
It's the Dutch in me.
Yeah, pardon my behavior. I had an ancestor that came over on the Mayflower and he was an ass. So, you know.
I really like bright colors. I had Spanish in me. I'm sorry.
So the Duchy of Saxony was originally settled by the Saxons in the late Middle Ages, and it sounds like it was incorporated in Germany by like 1296. So I'm just saying, it just seems like a non-distinction anymore to be like, I'm Anglo-Saxon. You know you're not. Like, why? In fact, that's a weird lineage to hold on to. They were subdued and conquered by somebody else hundreds of years ago.
A long time ago.
And you're pouring back to your lineage of a prime people who were overtaken.
You know, here's another deal I ran into with racism this week is I was filling out some immigration paperwork, and it asks you if you're like it has African American and then Native Indian and then white/Hispanic and then other, and I thought, did someone sue? You know what I'm saying? Like, white and Hispanic are notably different.
So maybe those are the only two fellows that haven't sued. So.
We don't need our own one.
Parsing them out, and then like so far, a Hispanic guy and a white guy haven't sued anybody, so like they're still in the box together.
Yeah, you know, that actually makes the most sense.
In general, there's not a whole lot of plight for the white person, and so like I don't think they need to sue to get their own box.
Yeah, and it's not like I'm like, hey man, I want to be identified as a white man. I could care less. But like when you say white/Hispanic, like they're the same. Why would you even make the distinction of two words if they're the same? You know what I'm saying? Just say put everyone else in the other. And what are you other anyway? You know, are you from Iceland, or do you not count as a white/Hispanic then?
Hey man, everybody asks for that stuff. What are they doing with this data? Like, we do a census, right? So, like, our national data comes from a census of when that they do every 10 years, and they get this type of information. What is the DMV doing with this?
Well.
And what is, like,
Well, is it possible that the immigration office, a guy with the name Mike Foost, could roll in there as a Hispanic? Because I checked white Hispanic, and they're like, yeah, that's him. You know what I'm saying?
So it's not to validate who you are. You're just trying to screw the Hispanic Mike Foost?
But that's what I'm saying. That's how, if it was for legal purposes, right, to help identify me in case there was a fraudulent claim against someone else claiming to be Mike Foost, like a Mike Foost black man couldn't show up, and a Mike Foost, what was the other option? Oh, Native Indian couldn't go in there, but a Mike Foost Hispanic, he could roll right in, and no one would know the difference.
Yeah.
And definitely not a Mike Foost other.
I'm just saying, like there's attempting to categorize people, and then there's a helpful way to figure out whether I'm the real Mike Foost.
Well, that's also just base demographics to set up. Like, yeah, we took the census every 10 years, but maybe this company wants their information that's a little bit more fresh than
I guess I just don't understand what they're doing with it. It doesn't have any teeth, except for...
it's one category among probably 20 that they're trying to figure out exactly who their demographic is, of who's doing what. And in what situation?
That's my question, though. So, like, what exactly are they doing with it? If it's just a like a person.
Just for a bunch of market research.
Like a you're saying you don't think it's for security reasons.
No.
You think it's for we might as well get this information while we're having them plow through a bunch of paperwork.
Yeah, you have to put that on pretty much everything.
That's the question.
Any government thing you're doing, any basic if you're signing up for a new email thing, or if you're hooking up with a new app you have to sign into a new account with, half the time they ask you what's your gender. And what's your nationality or what's your race or something like that. It's probably just their high-level market research for who's using their product.
Yeah, but doesn't the tail wag the dog if you're like, well, whites and Hispanics use the email like this?
I'm not saying it's right or if it's actually accurate. I'm just saying that's probably what's
If you
smart.
Fail to identify with the origin, you're more likely to click phishing links. Like,
if you're other, you definitely use the Yahoo.
I guess I'm just interested in what it is that they're actually doing.
White Hispanics stay within Gmail.
Okay.
Who knows?
Anyway, Duchy Saxony. It's been too many years. It's time to give it up.
Hey, man, would you accept someone who says they're Ottoman?
That
was only like 60 years ago, wasn't it?
No, Ottoman Empire collapsed in the late 1800s.
No.
Yes.
It was around the 1900s.
But no, because they split it up after World War I.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it would have been 1918.
So, 90 years ago.
100
years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, that you could have a living Ottoman.
It's very old.
Yeah. All right. Anyway. Three things about porn you won't hear in church.
From the Ottomans to porn.
Here we go. As pornography becomes more and more normalized in American culture, the church as a whole is starting to realize that this is no longer an issue to be ignored. That's great news.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
But even as churches become more open to speaking about this issue, there are still some things you can't count on hearing from the pulpit. Here are three things the church won't teach you about porn. One, it's becoming more culturally acceptable, especially among young people. Is that necessary to say from the pulpit? Because I feel like everybody knows that. Maybe we don't know that. It says you might hear about this in conjunction with the long rant about culture's declining morals, but it's highly unlikely that your church will let you know just how acceptable pornography is becoming in American society. A recent watch of the basic television... no, that's not what they said. A recent in-depth survey by the Barna Group has revealed that porn use is on the rise among teenagers and young adults. In-depth, eh? And that is less and less seen as morally wrong to use porn. In fact, among the young people surveyed, only 32% said that viewing porn was usually or always wrong. I'm surprised at how high that number is.
Yeah.
Compare that to the percentage of those who felt the same way about not recycling. 56%.
What? Hey, it is actually quite the imbalance. I kind of get railed when I don't recycle appropriately. I'm like, these are the things we're worried about? You know what I'm saying? Here's the problem with recycling. I don't want to get on a tangent here because we're talking about the porn, but... you have to keep a whole other bin for this stuff, especially when it comes to recycling cans. And then the recycling can bin gets full, and they're like, what do we do with it? And no one knows where to put these cans. And then they end up out in the lawn or something in a bag or taking a precious, you know, closet space. And I'm like, dude, just throw it away. Will you just throw it away? I just want them gone. Who's with me?
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand. Hey, if you could help save the earth, what Mike's like, hey, what can I do? I'd like to help God's creation. You need to walk roughly 15 feet. Yeah. To this box and put stuff in, and you're like, eh.
It's not going to work.
I'm not interested in that.
I don't like the color of that bin.
It's not really worth it.
It's taking up too much space of a
that
place.
That green is too ironic.
I understand, Mike. All right. Number two. Plenty of people next to you in the pews are struggling with it, but that doesn't mean everyone in church is all fine and dandy with using porn. In fact, there are plenty of your fellow churchgoers who struggle with porn, though you may never know it because they would never admit it. These are the kinds of things that get admitted on anonymous surveys, but that don't tend to come up at the latest potluck. Well,
that'd be a weird place to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. Most people don't just vet out the stuff that they're struggling with next to the weenies wrapped in bacon.
Okay, so here, if your community is based off of an event that happens on Sunday morning, and in that event where there's 150 people in a room, then no one's talking about, hey, I watch porn six times this week, I can understand why that's a problem within your church. But, like, if you have a basic understanding of, hey, you know, we can talk besides just right now. And, hey, do you want to get together, like, maybe once this week and talk about what we're really struggling with? Not just me and the other 149, just you and I? It's no longer that big of a surprise.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. That'd be weird to be like, hey, I watch porn. Pass the scallop potatoes there,
yeah.
Earl.
Hey, man, do you have the offering plate coming up? Yeah. Hey, I watch porn.
Yeah, because even though the church has made inroads into becoming safe places for people to admit their weaknesses and failings, there are still far too many in the church who feel like they must keep their happy faces firmly in place. I get what we're saying here, but that's a distinction between a private conversation and a public conversation, right. Regardless of
exactly.
What the public is.
That's not exactly a fail of the church. One, that's a fail of the guy not to tell anybody, right? Like, and find another dude in there who seems like they got their stuff together and be like, I'm struggling with this thing. If you haven't tried that, you can't really point fingers at 75 people and be like, they're not supporting me, and I feel like it's not the right time to bring it up to potluck. Well, you're right. It is not the right time to bring it up to potluck.
Yeah.
Find someone else.
If like 68% of the nation thinks it's okay to look at porn, and even a marginal amount of those people use the post office, and we're still not talking about pornographic use at the post office and like how much you look at porn during the week, I feel like this is a false standard that we're looking at.
Yeah.
To be putting that on the church. It says, sadly, even though most churches are aware of the breadth of the porn problem in their pews, that I think is not true. Very few churches have any formal ministries or programs in place to help their members deal with their porn problems and find freedom from it.
You think people would go, this is just a question of mine, like, do you think people seek out that in a program form, or is just flat out better done with one of the guys?
I was just about to ask that same question. I feel like that's the creepy program you go to that nobody really wants to go and sit around a table and talk about what they're dealing with 15 strangers. Like, that's a very intimate conversation.
Yeah, whatever. Hey, if you're struggling with porn, come here at Saturday at 10. You tell me there's not at least a few onlookers who happen to be dropping off dishes that day so they can take a peek and see who the perv is.
I'm 100% certain someone's going to drive by the church parking lot to see if they recognize cars and be like, ooh, Stan has a porn problem. Apparently.
Yeah, and this is the same guy that's not going to tell his wife straight up because he's going to the program, right? So he's like, well, I'm going to go hang out with these dudes. Yeah. The porn thing's going on. Well, I can help people there. You know?
Exactly. I'm going to go there and I'm going to serve coffee.
So I actually talked to a cat about 6-8 months ago. We were talking about this, but like there was a men's group at his church, you know, and like he had just started going and he's like, well, you know, I can hook up with the men's group. And he goes, I had to stop going after a couple months because all they did was want to talk about porn. Every time I went, it was like a giant porn discussion. I'm like, well, truth of the matter is, it's a pervasive problem. He goes, we never got past it. We never wanted to talk about anything else. We didn't talk about loving our wives. We didn't talk about, you know, raising godly children. We didn't talk about work and how that struggle balances out. And he goes, yeah, I get it. It's a problem. But like, if your entire men's group, and this is actually what men's groups turn out to be. They want to talk about exercise, weightlifting, and shooting guns, and then porn.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is it. This is the depth of the modern Christian man. This is all we can talk about is firing a weapon and lifting weights and porn. and this is it, you know? And nothing about any of the rest of your life to actually encircle these sin issues. And like, it works just like, I was talking to my father-in-law this week about his lawn. His lawn's looking pretty uptown. He had a dude come out and start spraying the thing, you know? And I said, why is this so tall? You know, he goes, well, they do the weed and feed, you know, like they shoot all the weeds so they start dying off, and then they fertilize it so the grass will take over where the weeds used to be. And I'm like, this is how Jesus works. You know what I'm saying? Jesus is the weed and feed for the American man. He shows up and he says, hey, this stuff has got to go, but I'm going to replace it with something so it don't grow back. Right, it feeds right into the evil spirits in the house.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know, story that he tells. You know, and so like that's the problem when you have men's groups that all they do is talk about is porn is a problem, and you're still sucking at it, and you're terrible, and you failed again. But there's hope and redemption for you in Jesus Christ, and that's where it stops. Right, like it has to be. Give me another dude. Give me his phone number, and I don't want to do this once a week thing. Like I'm going to battle this by the minute. And by the hour, and by the day, until I can battle it by the week. And I ain't ready to battle it by the week yet, so we're going to do it in the minute, and the hour, and the day. And that's where you get one other guy to do that. I feel like that is way more helpful to do that on a one-on-one fella basis, opposed to a week of basically, 10 guys sitting in a room admitting that they look at porn. Whatever, it's not a big shocker, you know?
So what's the ground of that, though? So if you don't need a formal program, if it's best handled individually, but it sounds like people aren't doing it individually.
That's because they're scared.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be calling for a formal program.
It's difficult to set up that kind of trust if you don't walk into that realizing that, hey, man, we are both screwed up. We're probably dealing with the same kind of stuff. Like, it's difficult to walk up to a dude you don't know and go, hey, nice to meet you. You know, my name's blah, blah, blah. You know, hey, let's talk for a couple of minutes. And then, oh, by the way, I watch porn 15 times a week and I'm really struggling with that. Can I text you every time I'm thinking about looking at porn?
Yeah.
Like, that's a very difficult thing to set up unless you are serious.
Yeah.
Like, very serious about, hey, this has got to go.
So do you think it's, this is where I kind of struggle is like my general fallback is to say, look, find a guy that you trust and who's a godly man and then pair up with that dude. But, that's even harder to tell that guy. Especially like if you, let's say you're having a one-on-one conversation, right? Like, is it better to have, that accountability with another guy that looks at porn too? Or is it better to find a guy that does not struggle with that, and then you know, you can hit him up, and like, it's embarrassing every time, but like, if you're serious about it, I feel like you'll do that.
Yeah.
You know, where if you get another Christian man who means well, and you're like, we'll be accountability partners and keep an eye on each other's usage. You know, give me a call when it's struggling or whatever, and you call him up. He's like, yeah, I'm struggling too. We're probably good. You know what I'm saying? Like, is there a risk where you get two guys that have the same proclivity that they'll just give in and fall in on each other? You know.
So I mean, AA always chooses your sponsor is a dude that's gone through it, right?
Sure.
I don't know. That seems to work for that. I mean, it may probably make sense for a dude that struggles with it but has, like, at least in essence, likely conquered it to kind of walk them streets with you. I mean, that seems to make sense. And frankly, it doesn't sound like, from the survey perspective, we're not short on dudes.
Right.
We're actually, I guess we are. We're short on dudes who have actually conquered the thing.
No, and that guy can't have 15 people texting him every day.
Yeah, he's going to have a lot of friends.
Right. And unfortunately, that guy's going to be thinking about porn a lot more often if he's got 15 dudes texting him every day that says, hey, man, I looked at porn. Thinking about looking at porn. He goes, hey, man, it's been 2 years. Stop telling me about it because now I want to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tricky. All right, number three was a shocking percentage of the people on stage struggle with it. Once more, we turn to the Barna survey, which shows that the majority of pastors, 57%, and youth pastors, 64%, have struggled with porn either in the past or currently. Those who do struggle with porn say it negatively affects their ministry, probably because it's a sin. Says it negatively affects their ministry, probably because 55% of those pastors say they live in constant fear of being discovered. I feel like you could say the same thing as if you were a kleptomaniac. Like, if you're a constant
compulsive liar.
Yeah. Like, it's a problem in your ministry simply because it separates you from Jesus.
Well, there it is, right?
Who's the head of your ministry.
Yeah, exactly. That should be the thing. It's like they say, I'm worried it's ruining my ministry because I'm not following God, right? Like, I'm worried about the separation from Christ when these things are going down. Yeah. Not, I hope someone doesn't find out.
The kind of people that are surprised by these surveys is the kind of person that would be surprised by the same survey that says 100% of your pulpit speakers are actually sinners. And they go, wait a minute, what? That pastor's not perfect? Like, I thought that was one of the prerequisites. But then just a cursory reading of pretty much any part of the Bible gets the whole concept of, hey, yeah, we all kind of screw up. And, oh, by the way, even your pastors. That is included in the word all. He's a human being, or she's doing this and stuff like that. I don't get why this is something that's so surprising.
It's because no one talks about it. That's the thing.
This
is where it all wraps up. It's like you'll find pastors that will, when they're given a message on gossip or something, they're like, I've been guilty of this. They're like, yeah, I can understand. He really is just human. But if he stands up and goes, I've struggled with porn in the past, they're like, what?
How dare he?
He's a dirtbag.
Yeah. No, this is terrible.
That guy can't be teaching me. It drives me. I don't trust a pastor that's not willing to admit that. Like, I don't trust a dude that's not willing to stand in front of people and be honest to a certain degree. Now, I'm not expecting the guy to walk up there and say, hey, here is the nitty-gritty details of exactly what struggles I've had with porn before, because, I mean, ultimately that's just an overshare and that's going to freak a couple people out. But, like, a guy that's willing to go up there and just be honest about this kind of stuff, I respect that. And I feel like there of course will be casualties of that where people will go, well, obviously this pastor is a sinner and I can no longer go to this church. But you will get serious people that go, okay, it's a refreshing thing, not necessarily a good thing, but a refreshing thing to realize that my leadership in this church and the people that are supposed to be helping shepherd me and are supposed to be leaders above me are also dealing with this kind of stuff. And it's not just, oh, I'm in the dirt and they're way further along than me. I feel like there shouldn't be that disconnect. And unfortunately, there is.
Yeah, the only hesitation, I guess, with that, because I think I would tend to agree with that, is that, I mean, when you start looking at the way that Paul describes people that should be deacons, elders, pastors, they do seem to have most of it together. So there's probably there's probably a distinction between the guy who's like, I don't know who, your pastor should be pursuing righteousness, like he should, but like in no difference than what everyone else should. I suppose it is just the nature of it is hard to tell people to preach scripture to humans if you are acting like you are not a human, right? So there's an honesty that's built in to say, look, if none of this stuff impacts you, like you just have no connection with anybody, right? If you're going to teach on something and it just simply isn't relatable, people aren't going to hear themselves in it. And Jesus did the opposite of that, right? Jesus told, you know, folksy stories, they're parables that people could recognize themselves in, or like things that they would understand. And if you're giving examples or telling stories or have such a disconnect from society, like that's a problem. And you're not an effective communicator. And that's your barrier as a pastor, not being being honest about that, but being able to communicate it in an honest way.
Do you feel like some of those people that listen to Jesus's parables, they say, "Hey man, what did he just say?" And a guy says, "I don't know. I don't have ears to hear." You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I didn't get none of it, and I think that was on purpose.
Actually, no, I've had that thought before. I've read through it, and I thought oh, okay, I get this, and then I've heard someone else explain it, and it was way better. They understood the takeaways were a little bit different than where I came from, and I thought, shoot, man, maybe I'm trying to hear this, and I won't get it at all because I don't have ears to hear.
Yeah, you're like, Jesus, give me ears to hear. He goes, nah,
no,
no, not yet.
No,
this is if I ever have a temptation on the moving into Reformation thought is, if I am not the elect, it's my inability to process the parable. I think, hey, I don't get this crap.
Yeah.
They were right.
I feel that way every time I read The Dishonest Manager. I'm like, well, he seems like he did the right thing. I mean, it seemed wrong because he stole, but he did get praised at the end. Like, he was shrewd and made good business moves. I don't know what I'm supposed to take away from this. Like, should I be more shrewd or should I not steal from people and tell lies about how much people owe me? I don't get it. I'm confused completely.
It says, the fact of the matter is your pastor is more than likely someone who is currently struggling with porn or who has had an issue with porn in the recent past. This can make them understandably less likely to talk about it, but hopefully this fact can also give you grace for them and for yourself if you're someone who struggles with it. Here's the thing, is like, I've actually had the opposite deal. Like, this has been a struggle for me in the past. And like, you can hardly find a guy I've met with that doesn't know that. right? Because like, it's just something that has gone on with me. And it's something like if I'm like working towards like rooting some of those temptations and stuff out of my life, they just know about it.
Yeah, this is an area in particular where you can find the guys that are serious about it, right? Like, because it is something that goes on in secret, you have to go above and beyond and out of your way to kill it publicly. Like, because you could kill it all you wanted to in secret. And then it will just come back where it came from. It just returns back. And so, like, most people I find that have struggled with looking at porn in the past, it's not a secret that it's been a struggle for them. And they will go out of their way to kill it publicly, right? You know what I'm saying? Like there's a lot of people that mean business. These are the same people that don't delete their internet history anymore. They just don't do it. It's just not something that they do. They don't delete their text messages ever. Ever. Because they want to say, look, you want to look. You want to see anything? See anything. It's here. And say, if you ever catch me deleting my internet history, you come find me because I've been up to something.
Yeah.
And like, these are the guys that mean business. They don't leave themselves any doors for a path back to where they came from. And like, the guys that really are trying to get out of this thing, they will do it in a very public manner, in a very open and honest way with both their wife and then probably a couple guys around them to say, look, I'm leaving everything open. Here's my passwords, my emails. You know, here's I'm installing XXX Church onto my web browsers. And then they put up like your accountability guy. This is my favorite part, right? I've had a couple guys come up and say, look, I'm putting this software on my computer that hits people up with an alert. You know, if they catch me looking at something I shouldn't, they send an email to that person. And it's like, who should it be? I don't know if I want to send it to my wife. I said, well, here's your options. You can either send it to your wife, which I think is the best idea, your grandma, which is, I think, the second best idea, or you can pick the girl that you had a crush on in high school and you didn't tell her and send her. and you're going to send it to her. Which one you want to do? They go, well, I guess my wife sounds best. I said, yeah, I think you should pick your wife.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, the guys that are serious would be like, okay, I'll pick somebody. It's going. I'll pick my wife out of those three options, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah, and here's the thing: is like, those aren't the reason those are good is because they are they're snapshots, they're photographs of freedom, of mile markers in freedom. It's to say, like, I'm not. If you're a guy like that, you're not. You don't delete your internet history or your text messages, not because you want to have to be able to say, hey, see, I didn't do this. It's because it's an earmark. It's a benchmark that says, I want freedom, And that's where those things come from. And so, like, the more open you live those things out, the less likely you're going to stumble back into them, because what you're running around with milestones, with celebration markers that say, yeah, the minute you reach up as if you're going to delete that, you are reminded of the freedom of which you're giving up by engaging in whatever scenario has caused this. And so, like, those are positive things, and, like, they live more free and less chained to things that, like, reasonably, if you want to delete your text message, you could, but, like, they'll go that extra mile because there's freedom in that says, I really do not care. I don't care that it's here. I don't care if you look at it. And so, I would agree with that. So let's talk about, well, let me finish the article. No, I think let's see if there's some next steps here. So it says, one thing the church at large loves to talk about is victory, but we'd prefer to see the church start talking about lasting freedom, something that is available to everyone, whether they're in the pulpit or the pews. They can start with My Pilgrimage, a groundbreaking way of thinking about pornography that will change the church, the world, and you. Porn is here. It's growing, but it doesn't have to. It's time for the church to get the word out. So, proper next steps, fellas, is it maybe like, first of all, let's be honest about where we're at with this thing. And then it sounds like we need to be having close conversations with people that we know. Like, things that we may think are awkward, we just go up to a fella and say, hey, you struggle with pornography? I mean, like,
oh, gas bin.
Here's the deal. I was trying to think of a different way to do that. But, I mean, he may be taken aback, but just, I mean, do it in proper private quarters. But, like, either he's going to say no or yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, either way.
It's either no or nervous laughter?
And then yeah.
Oh, and then yeah, okay.
Because he's not going to nervous laughter and say no unless he's lying. But
yeah, so you should ask him those questions in succession.
Yeah.
Like, are you having a problem with porn? No. Are you a liar?
Are you having a problem with lying?
Let's start
apparently.
Over.
Apparently. Would you like to go back to step one?
Yeah. Do you just lie about porn or do you lie about other things? Liar.
This has turned from seeking an accountability partner to, hey, Speck, I'm Log. Nice to meet you.
I chew through accountability partners pretty fast.
I'm not denying the log in my own eye.
Okay, I suppose that's fair.
I'm just, you know, we're going to take a selfie with it and snuggle up to a guy with a speck and say, hey,
man, let's both look at
let's
log.
Chat.
Ultimately, there's a certain level of, if you're serious about this, awkwardness really doesn't matter. Like, if this is an issue and you are honestly and earnestly seeking out accountability and are looking for a way out, which I've talked to, I have talked to many people, and there's a side to this where you're not stuck in this crap that is porn, that is lust and stuff like that. Like, there's a certain level of, yeah, you give up comfortability to seek that purity.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that's right. The first step is really saying, if your hesitancy is, I think this is going to be awkward, it's like, you're right.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah, but I mean, the awkwardness stems from the fact that you've been looking at porn. If you want to move away from the awkwardness of having to hide that you look at porn, the right step is to start talking about it so that you don't hide it. See, here's the deal: you can't stop the fact that you've already looked at porn. What you can do is stop hiding it. So let's do the things that you can control. You can control hiding things. So start talking about them out loud, and then start working your way to freedom, right? But, like, if you want freedom from this thing, you ain't going to get it hiding in your room at, like, 1 in the morning and, I wish I could be free of this. Click, click, click. You dummy.
Yeah, and here's where I think most people fail at this, is once you tell somebody this thing, you have to be ready to accept some consequences, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, if you set them up to be your accountability person, they're going to ask you. And you can't be getting all offensive, say, 3 weeks in where you're like, look, man, you got to stop asking me that. Or, you know, come on, it's embarrassing. You know what I'm saying? You're going to get it from your wife. Your wife's going to ask you. She's going to see that you're sitting in the computer and she's going to know what you're doing. And you're going to feel like she's coming down on you and she's giving you a hard time and she's always tracking with what you're doing. Well, listen, you looked at porn. You know what I'm saying? It's coming with the redemptive territory. You got to give some people some grace to be able to help you without you getting offended. Like, your ability to be offended about people asking you about this problem has got to go right out the window.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You've got to be all right with that because what you're going for is death. You want this sin to die.
Yeah.
And if it takes people asking you a question every week for the rest of your life, but the sin died, you won. Right? You won.
Totally worth that.
That's all that's all that it takes. And it'll subside. It'll get better. And you won't feel this way all the time. But be careful, because when you start feeling better, like people ain't paying attention to you no more, this is when your fellow that you used to know likes to come showing back up at the house and be like, hey, it's your old buddy from college. Maybe I could crash at your place for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You're like, well, I don't see any harm in that. You fool. No, that man's not allowed in the house no more.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I agree completely. It's interesting that this conversation is happening in kind of the context of Pamela Anderson had an op-ed in, I think it was the Wall Street Journal this week about the dangers of pornography. And, like, again, that's an odd source, right? She's been in a couple highly public sex tapes, has been on the cover of Playboy more often than anybody else. And she was, she did like a joint article with Rabbi Shmuley. Do you guys remember him? He had like
absolutely.
Totally. No, I know exactly who
you're
talking about. Listen
here. He had a reality show.
Favorite rabbi.
He had a reality show on like TLC or someone. It was like Shalom with Rabbi Shmuley. And
that's trustworthy.
He did like counseling stuff. Anyway, so she said, if anyone still had doubts about the addictive dangers of pornography, Anthony Weiner should have put them to rest with his repeated self-sabotaging sexting. That guy, he's going to be the dumbest guy alive.
Boy, that however, ain't no kidding.
However, like, he is the same guy as every other person. It's just the rest of the dudes don't happen to get caught. He just doesn't do it
and
right.
And highly publicized.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is like his sexting with someone, and whatever his proclivities are no different than the guy, like whoever's listening to this, or sitting in the pew next to you that has these same problems. You just don't, nobody cares that you're sexting someone. It won't make the newspaper. somebody could find out that the average guy in the church is looking at porn, and it's not going to make the Register or the Tribune, right? But he does because of his position, and because frankly he got caught doing it multiple times, and he's an idiot.
Oh, he's such an idiot.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing: is like he's no different. It's just more public, and so like we want to look at this guy as a moron, but like you're in that same boat. You're doing the same moronic behavior. It's just fewer people care, and sometimes some reason that gives you a sense of peace when it should not. But it said, what is required is an honest dialogue about what we're witnessing, the true nature and danger of porn, and an honor code to tamp it down in the collective interest of our well-being as individuals, as families, and as communities. And Pamela Anderson says that pornography is having a corrosive effect on a man's soul and on his ability to function as a husband and, by extension, as a father. This is a public hazard of unprecedented seriousness, given how freely available, anonymously accessible, and easily disseminated pornography is nowadays. I agree. I think that's true.
It's true. And I might tell you something else, boys. This is just for the men, folks. Ladies, you leave the room for a minute. Women do not want a picture of your penis.
No, yeah.
I mean, seriously, the women do not work the same way you work. Like, I'm sure there are certain things that they're like, yeah, that's cute or whatever. They don't want a picture of your penis.
No, yeah.
It's a guarantee. Most of them find it odd looking, weird. And they're like, and then they have to immediately delete it off their phone and hope no one wants to borrow their phone because your penis is on it. Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
I mean, let's say you're in a Christian loving marriage and you're just a good loving husband who's been a man of one woman his whole life. That woman still does not want a picture of your penis.
Nope.
That's just not the way it works, okay? Nope. Get it through your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Broad shoulders, abs, maybe.
Yeah.
No penis.
No. I mean, do you know how many guys at work I've had to talk to about this? Like, they're like, I just sent her a picture of my penis. I'm like, what? Why? Did she ask for it? No, I just sent it to her. I'm like, you're an idiot.
I thought it would really rile her up.
Yeah. It don't work
no
like
sense.
You want to rouse her up when you're responsible. You know what I'm saying? And you stop acting like an 8-year-old boy.
Yeah. Take care of your kids. Read them a story and make them smile. I guarantee you that'll work a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you send your penis somewhere. You just caused a problem. A, your penis is on somebody's phone. B, it's probably being backed up to, like, the Google Drive, because they don't assume they're going to get penis pics. And they delete the thing, and then they go to look at it, their Google Drive photos or i2i photos or whatever, like, 3 weeks later, and there's a penis on there, too.
Yeah.
You're hiding penises all over the place, making yourself feel bad.
Plus, yeah, I mean, then you got to judge whether the picture was any good. And now what are you doing? You're sitting around by yourself looking at a man's penis.
Right. Gauging the light, gauging the
That's
substance
right.
of the
You've
photo.
You've taken a picture of a penis, and now you're staring at it and trying to decide if it's good enough to send.
Yeah.
You, sir, are having a bad life.
Yeah, you're a weird person.
Just stop doing that.
Oh, man.
For heaven's sakes.
This is definitely a conversation I didn't think we'd be having, but it's definitely needed.
It's one that has to happen. I've heard way too many stories.
Trust me. Among my generation, it is so much worse, and it's unfortunately, it's not married men to their wives or anything like that. It is dudes that are out there trying to talk to 15, 20 chicks at a time and unwillingly or like unwantingly send that stuff just to as many people as possible in hopes of someone going, oh, hey, great, would you like to come over? It's bad.
So they're using it as the wrong filter. If you're going to do that, if somebody responds and says, hey, yes, I'm interested, you've just got a definite no. If you, like, take them off the list of people that you should be dating.
Right.
If you get someone that says, that's disgusting, do not do that to me.
They're going
to
call you out in 20 years when you're a fool and have kids with her.
That's what I'm saying. Like, consider trying to date that person.
Yeah. They seem to have you're filtering it incorrectly.
Yeah. Freaking dudes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great picture. She's totally going to dig on that.
Are you kidding me? What? You know what I'm saying? What's the matter with you? You're in your own bathroom. You know? Like, I mean, seriously. I just don't understand people.
Wait, they're doing it in the house that their wife is in?
Well, I'm not sure how it's done.
It's possible. Worse.
But, I mean,
hey, sweetheart, on a business trip.
You can...
Miss you.
The camera roll noise.
I don't know.
Once again, I'm not really sure how
some cell phones are still old enough to have the shutter noise that you could put on. That's what we're talking about.
All right. Can the ladies come back now, Mike?
Yeah, ladies can come back in. Welcome I'm back. Sorry about that. Seriously, don't listen to that, ladies. I'm just telling you, that was for the fellas. It's got to stop. It's got
to
stop.
Fellas, go back and listen to that again.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. It's an article. Wait. So the takeaway, though, was... No, stop. Hey, we're going to put that on the app. Remember, we did the Live from the Path app. The one was the picture where you take a selfie, and then it automatically produces a photo that says, this man cannot be trusted.
Yes.
That was the first one.
And then, destroys pride.
And then I suppose we can do a penis pic button where you click it, and then you just hear Mike going, yeah.
That would deter anyone.
Does that look right? No!
How's the lighting on this one?
And it just produces a screen that says, at the, whatever time you press the button, at 10:50 p.m., you made a mistake.
Yes. You made a horrible decision exactly 2 seconds ago.
Call your accountability, man. You're falling off the rails. All right, so it was a Christian Post article by Matt Moore. It was Christians Prepare for Lifelong War. When will it end? This question pours endlessly into my email box. Struggling saints, wearied by the constant haunting whispers of their sinful nature, long to know how much longer they must fight before the evil thing is beaten into lifeless silence. Are they doing something wrong? Are their flesh-combating strategies ineffective? Are they not reading Scripture or praying long enough? Are they even saved? Every time they get some level of victory over a specific sinful disposition or habit, it seems a new or previously unrealized manifestation of the flesh surfaces in its place. The endless activity of their indwelling sin sends them spiraling into skepticism, even skepticism about the truthfulness of this great salvation in Christ Jesus. How can the powerful redemption the Scriptures speak of be real when the sin within still feels so powerfully alive? These doubt-laced arrows of the enemy have penetrated my own heart. I have at times found myself considering the possibility that Christianity might just be a set of pleasant but fictional ideas that produce a sense of peace and hopefulness that are merely psychologically induced. As the activity of my flesh persists, I have wondered if the seeming lack of sin-silencing power in my life evidences the non-reality of the faith I profess and the grace in which I think I stand. If God has really sprinkled the divine blood of His only Son over my soul and implanted His own Spirit into my heart, shouldn't I be freer from the presence and influence of sin than I am? Does that ring true for anybody?
Yeah, I mean, he used way too many fancy words for me to follow exactly what he was saying.
I understand.
It sounds about right.
Yeah.
Okay. Same boat.
Okay.
Hey, man, do you want to help people or you just want to sound smart? Because I feel like you can really help me, but you have done bloated this thing completely up and where I'm missing what you're getting at.
Sprinkled the divine blood of his... Like, come on, man.
Hey, he gets paid by the word.
All right.
That's
fair.
That's true for most guys on the net. That's why everyone blowhards. Now, the comment sections are free. I don't know what goes on there. But, like, the articles themselves... you can tell the guys that get paid by the click are paid by the word. I tend to think so. However, though I might intuitively assume my flesh should be a bit more docile, the Bible tells a slightly different story, one in which the normative Christian experience is characterized not only by the joy, peace, and power of God, but also by unceasing war. The Holy Spirit has created within us believers a new nature that is inclined to God and suited for holiness, but our old nature, weakened yet still quite lively, declares war on the supernatural redirection of desires, as stated in Galatians 5:17. Hold on, let's look. Let's see what Galatians 5:17 is. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right on. For the flesh desires what is contrary to the spirit, and the spirit what is contrary to the flesh. They are in conflict with each other, so that you are not to do whatever you want. I kind of like how that New International Version does it. There we go. Though the spirit is always about his illuminating and quickening work within us, the flesh likewise works double time to entice us back to the idolatrous altars at which we formerly bowed, and until our cursed bodies are swallowed up by glorious immortality. This inner tension will persist. Some seasons will be less intense than others, but the remaining sin within us will never cease in its God-hating and faith-opposing activity. So this does seem like a struggle that I think some fellows that I've talked to have had, where it's like, how can this still be if I feel like my reality is supposed to have changed? If the Holy Spirit is here to, at the barest sense, help me conform to the image of Jesus, and perhaps beyond, how can I continue to struggle with the things that I struggle with? And if I do, what does that mean about the presence of the Holy Spirit in my life, my submission to that, or lack thereof, or the truth of the gospel message entirely? I think those are legitimate struggles.
Yeah. So, I guess the question: what was his summation on? Is his summation that this is just going to happen?
It says, when we accept and expect continual conflict, we aren't shrinking back from battle. We are simply protecting ourselves from unbiblical expectations of struggle-free ease and the paralyzing doubts that will surely accompany those expectations, as well as embracing a mindset that is prepared for war and thus more capable of waging it. It was basically saying, I don't know where that expectation came from, but it's a false one. There's a falseness that says, with the presence of the Spirit or in your relationship with Jesus does not mean that you will not have struggles. It does not mean that sin will not at least attempt to persist in your life and that you will not have to fight it. Basically, it reminds you that there is still a battle going on this side of eternity. And it is the wrong expectation and the wrong basis of evaluating validity of what Scripture talks about as to whether there's the presence or the persistence of these temptations in your life.
Yeah, so classically, what it really boils down to is the truth of the matter is that we're not good at doing hard things. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're right, the struggle is going to be there, and it will be a persistent struggle. We're just not good at fighting it. We just go, that's the best I can do. You know, I made it like 3 hours. Or someone came and told me what this other person did over the weekend, and I feel like I got to tell at least one guy.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm not telling 10. And so the struggle that you had to not tell anybody, you thought, well, I'll cut that struggle in half and tell one guy, and then it'll be fine. Or I'll cut this struggle in half, and I won't have to worry about treating my girlfriend super nice so she will eventually marry me. I'll just go look at porn and treat her however the heck I want.
Yeah.
No struggle. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I think that's actually the deal. When you boil it all down, we got no spine.
Yeah.
We got no backbone. We don't have the full armor of God where we say, look, we put this armor on because we meant to. And I know it carries 60 pounds of badassery, but like, I'm not going to put it on because I don't want to mess with hauling it around. I would rather just do what I want and move a little freer and not have to have the struggle.
This is totally off topic, but I now want to get a tattoo of the 60 pounds of badassery across my shoulders and then just have the mark to Ephesians. Armor of God, 60 pounds of badass.
Here's the thing. It's like I read articles like this, and right, like they hit me with a lot of truth. There is a lot of truth in what he's saying, and it does affect me. But really, the more, if I were to sit down and think about it for not two more minutes, I would realize that I'm just a coward and I don't like to fight. That I've looked at the ends and I've looked at what's going to come out of it. And for some reason, in my sinful thought process, I go, it ain't worth fighting that. Like, it's worth fighting a little. Or worth telling other people to fight for.
Yeah. Or I guess to some of what he's getting at too, if it's not easy, then it's not that I should fight harder or that I have to continue to engage in this battle. It's that the validity of Scripture must not be true.
Right.
Or it's true and I'm not part of it. Again, the most likely reason for me to take on a Reformed theology. I keep sinning in a certain way, and I think, well, damn it, it's not elect.
Yeah, I just can't. Thessalonians, I understand.
I get that's not quite the accurate representation of like what that thought process is, but like I'm not. It's occurred to me a few times.
I think so. I've seen I've seen, or myself have gone into this kind of two different ways. I've seen people have this question from the perspective of kind of like Mike was talking about, from like a we don't want to do hard things perspective of, you know, hey man, when is this battle over? Because I'm really tired and I don't want to do it anymore. And in that case, yeah, shut up. It's going to be going on forever. Just deal with it. You got to realize that there's going to be a lot of work to do. You're not going to be lying around in a nursing home when you're 85 and go, man, I'm super excited it's done. Like, oh, buddy, I remember all those bad thoughts I used to have and all the stuff I had to deal with. Ugh, it's so much better nowadays now that I've gotten through it. It doesn't exist. But then I've also heard from the perspective of, you know, when is this going to be over, from that guilt and then conviction perspective of, I really want to have a purity in my soul, and I want to look more like Jesus, and I want to be on that level where I can say that with confidence that I'm made in the image and likeness of God, and am able to say that with confidence, right? And I think that there's a certain level where you just got to step back and realize you have a lot of guilt in this perspective, but you got to realize God loves you entirely through this. Like, this really boils down to, yeah, you've got guilt and you've got this perspective where you wish you were done with this and you wish that you were no longer in the dirt and no longer dealing with all this sin. But like, the first step you've got to realize is, yeah, you are in the dirt, but God still loves you entirely through that. Like, he sees that sin and loves you for everything that you are. He hates it, but he still loves you as his son or daughter entirely. And until you can get to that place where you're not constantly blaming yourself for everything, you're not constantly stuck in a rut because of the fact you can't get over how bad you are, to where you start to look at the light and the identity that you have in Christ, like, you have to take that step to where, yeah, you're going to be dealing with this forever. It's going to be something that it will happen on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, or monthly basis for the rest of your life. But that doesn't mean God loves you any less, and you just fight. You keep fighting knowing that, okay, I'm dealing with this sin. This does separate me from God from that perspective, but I'm still his son. I'm still his daughter. I still can identify myself as loved and cherished by him. And I can get through this knowing that that's my foundation. It's difficult to walk into a sin battle not knowing that God loves you.
Yeah. All right.
I think you want a little help in this. I would mold your prayer life to follow it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would specifically say, you know, God, give me the fight. Give me the fight. I want to fight it. This is what I want to do, and I don't want to give in so easy, and I don't want to just lay down and have this be what it is. I love you, and I'm willing to fight for it, and I'm asking for extra strength for the fight.
Yeah.
And some of that is just calling stuff for what it is, right? Like, if you're running into a circumstance, like things that I've maybe it's a sin that I'm struggling with, or maybe it's just, I don't know, keeping myself kind of on the right path. Like, I just got to call that stuff out and be like, God, that's that thing right there that we were talking about, right? Like, things that I try to handle internally just don't seem to be very effective. Like, I have to, if I say things out loud, though, generally it's with a nope or a nuts, nuts, that's the thing we were saying. Like, it just helps me process it as a normal part of the day where I'm just, like, talking to Jesus about whatever it is that's going on and saying, I need some help on this thing. He's putting up a beast of a fight on me today. I don't know, it's powerful. Those are powerful things, like in praying constantly about that kind of thing. And I suppose setting your right expectations, like, you can't expect to be wandering around on a battlefield and not have some shots fired at your head. I suppose to put that in the terms of the article, like, you get concerned, be like, hey, there's people firing shots at me, and you're surprised as if you didn't understand you were walking in some sort of battle. But when you can look at the lives of the disciples, the early church, the instructions that Paul's given and stuff, and you're like, how could you come across thinking you were just going to kind of lazy Sunday walk out and about on a battlefield and not have anything flying around you? Like, that's just stupid. You're not even reading scripture right to come across with that inclination. And so it's probably more so not trying to find an apologetic for how this actually works. It's rooting out a false premise that the scripture actually won't support, which is the thought that everything is going to be smooth sailing. In fact, a lot of the fruits of the Spirit are things that happen in spite of how people firing shots at your head.
That's
right?
True, and they also require time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can have instant peace, but you can't have instant patience. You know what I'm saying? Like, that you to have patience, it has to be something that's been done over a length of time. I suppose peace with would pass over that. In fact, all of it has to. Like, instantaneous almost anything doesn't count as much, but, like, when it's sustained, that's when it can be defined as peace, patience, love, kindness. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, all those things are things that have to be done in succession to be an actual thing.
Right, and they're also credited as, like, the reason they're defined the way they are generally has to do interacting with the opposite. We love, the love of Jesus is special because even though, the fruits of spirit stuff, like, even though someone may hate you, you still love them. Even though you're in a situation of which you shouldn't have peace, it's not understandable that you have peace, you still have peace. Those are the definitions of the way that we look at, like, how those, what those words actually explain from a scriptural perspective. And so, like, those require testing. Those require perseverance through testing, and they certainly don't imply some sort of ease of life of which you do not have any type of temptation, or you're not running into circumstances of which peace, joy, love must be demonstrated.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good. Very good. Mike, people need advice.
Dear Live from the Path, I am a retired librarian who lives in Texas. I am what around here is called, quotations, Anglo, meaning white and not Hispanic.
Do people... I know we've kind of rowed this boat ashore, but like, do people say that to her?
What's up, Anglo?
Yeah, like, I like these three books, Anglo, and here's two bucks for my fines. Like,
none of that stuff is discussed here, man.
I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
She continues on without being interrupted. I speak four languages with varying degrees of proficiency. Recently, a friend who is Hispanic told me that if an Anglo speaks Spanish to a Hispanic person, it's considered an insult because it implies that the Hispanic person is too stupid to learn English. I had never heard of this before, so I asked a retired college-level Spanish teacher who is also Anglo. She informed me that the Hispanic people use the language difference as a boundary, and my speaking Spanish to them was a violation of their boundaries.
Ooh.
It came as a complete shock. This happened more than a month ago, and I'm having a hard time dealing with it. I spent a lifetime developing language skills. I always considered speaking another language to be a sign of respect and friendship. Now I'm being told that it's insulting and intrusive. I can't believe all Hispanic people feel this way, but I don't know what to do with this information. My next door neighbors are Spanish speaking. I've always spoken to them in Spanish because it's what I heard from them when I first met them. Now I don't know if I've been insulting to them. What should I do? Well, I tell you what you shouldn't do. Write a white lady.
Hey, fellow
ask her
Anglo.
What she thinks.
Okay.
Hello, upper crust white lady. How do you feel about my Spanish speaking ways?
As a fellow Anglo, what would you think? No. Stop blanketing communication. If someone walks up to you of Anglo or Spanish or Hispanic descent, whatever, and they start speaking to you in English, speak to them in English. If someone walks up to you and starts speaking to you in Spanish and asks if you speak Spanish, speak to them in Spanish.
Yeah, right, because the only...
That's it. If they are going to give you their preference when they start talking to you.
Right, if they speak English to you, and you start speaking Spanish to them, like, yeah, that's awkward. They obviously speak... You're just showing off.
Yeah, they just come up, hey, how are you? They go, hola, ¿cómo estás? And they're like, good, we're doing great, how are you? Muy bien. Like you're being creepy now,
yes.
And it sounds like you're just showing off to them, hey, by the way, I can tell you speak my language, but I also speak your language, just a heads up. That's weird.
If you haven't noticed, I'm not the Hills Brothers bean buyer, so can we just speak in regular terms?
I may be Blanco, but I can speak to you. It's like, no, that's weird. Just let them come to you with their preference, and then don't throw your thought process of what is good based off of what their communication is. You're being weird and awkward and rude. Yeah, I would agree.
Can you just talk to your neighbor?
Right. I mean,
like,
hi, Steven.
Do you mind? Like, is it offensive to you that I speak in Spanish? Oh no, we like it. It makes us feel welcome. Great, we'll continue to do so.
Yeah, I like to hear people butcher my language all the time.
My accent's not great because I've never left Iowa. It's ridiculous. If someone comes up to you and they're going to give you their preference, just stop being awkward about it.
You can always tell.
And don't take a picture.
Well, you always tell how far someone got in like their Spanish class or whatever by how they engage in speaking to someone who speaks Spanish. It's just like throwing out vocabulary words that are completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
Muy bien, la bufanda. No, it doesn't make any sense what you're saying.
Yeah, the people that got through the first month of Spanish are the ones who feel cool because they can say, ah, sí, sí, and say, oh, I know more than just good or bad. I can be so-so.
Yeah, so I'm just on the fence. I can be in the middle, and I really want to know where you're from.
Yeah. Yeah. Me gusta comida.
By the way, where's the bathroom? You understand me?
And people will come up to you and say, hey, do you speak Spanish, if they want you to speak Spanish to them? That's how it goes. That's how the world works.
You know my favorite part? I've seen people do this before. We're like, and this is the type of arrogance that usually comes with our Western civilization, but like old people who don't hear very well, and then people of a nationality that don't quite speak fluent English. People start to talk really long and slow and loud and drawn out in a very childish, insulting way. I don't even talk to my own kids this way, you know, but they're like, do you want the TV on? I mean, really, I could have gotten that done with remote control. Yay or nay with an eyebrow raise. You know what I'm saying? Eh, what do you think?
Use your nonverbals.
I mean, I taught my kids to talk just like that. I'd grab the remote control and say, you going to watch TV or no TV? And they would pick up on that and go, a head nod or a head shake. And I'd be like, well, they got it. You know? Yeah. Is there any reason to take this guy who has a master's degree in sociology from Pakistan, but since he don't grab English right, I automatically assume he's an idiot. And then I start talking to him really slow and long while he's rolling his eyes and be like, do you want this taxi cab? Yeah, I mean, he gets it. When the door open, he going to get in.
We are terrible with language. Americans are so, we are awful. We live in a place where we have 50 different states that have their own somewhat subcultures, but we all speak the same language. And therefore, we think that English is so wonderful, and everyone who comes here has to speak it, or they're dumb. It's ridiculous.
You feel like God said, look, they're trying for the second Tower of Babel. We're just going to let them have it. Just let them keep speaking.
I have talked to too many people that go, if you come to this country, you have to learn English, or you're just being dumb, or blah, blah, blah. It's ridiculous. When other places in the world, people are fluent in multiple languages because, you know, you take a day trip that's 2 hours, and you're a completely different country
that speaks a completely different language. Not our situation, to be fair.
Right. No, it's not.
There isn't that many languages here. And do you know how much money it costs us to print up signs in five languages? Like, our economy's ticking them. I mean, it's actually helping the economy. We have more people working for the government merely because we have to say no Fumar. You know what I'm saying? They're like we got to get five more guys working here just to pump out the sides. Like, they're putting money back in the economy.
Do you think realistically there's anybody who doesn't understand the picture of the guy slipping, like when they put it out when they're mopping, that we need the multiple language? Like, do you need Piso Mojado on there? Or, like, can we just, like, there's a guy falling down. Is that not sufficient?
Right. Isn't the picture the reason why we don't have to have all languages on there?
Yeah.
Actually, I would agree with that. But we don't, but we do. It does say no smoking, no Fumar, like the Spanish man would walk up and go, looks like they weren't talking to me.
They must only be speaking to English speakers. It has a big cigarette with a cancel sign on it. Yeah. But
and obviously this only applies to full cigarettes. I'll smoke a Lucy and everything will be fine.
My Virginia Slims are perfectly fine here.
Here's what Secular says. After reading your letter, I pulled a focus group of Spanish-speaking friends about it. I'd like to meet these friends.
This is already a credible source.
Some said it didn't bother them, but the majority explained that the reaction may depend on how long the family has been in this country. If it has been several generations, the people you are addressing might identify more as English speakers than Spanish speakers, and consider you're addressing them in Spanish to be condescending because it implies that you don't think they have learned English. So the rule of thumb would be, assume that everyone speaks English, then if it turns out they don't, use their language. P.S. If your relationship with your neighbor is a good one, tell them what you were told and ask if you may have offended them, because if you have, you would like to apologize.
In Spanish.
In Spanish.
Oh, so real. It's not even right.
Hey, man, did I ever tell you that story when I was in Paris for like 2 days? And we were walking through, we took the thing, the tunnel that goes between England and France. And you get off, and there's like metro stops, or like it looks like a subway type of thing in Paris. And so it's really crowded there. And I was getting around, and like probably for 2 days straight, I kept walking around going, like walking past people going, pardon, pardon, pardon. And that's not the French way to say like, excuse me. But I just took the word pardon and did it in some sort of French accent, like pardon. And it took me about a week. I look back and I was so stupid. I think they could pick me out a mile away. It's a wonder they didn't pick my pocket. Like, I'm quite obviously a tourist going around using a word in a French way that doesn't make any sense.
Hey, man, they didn't want your American dollars.
Pardon.
No, the exchange rate at the time was not favorable.
I was carrying euros
Right. Oh, they should have pickpocketed you. Hey, man, I think pardon is a French word.
Yeah, but I think I don't think
like so the whole excusez-moi thing. I think that means when you do something like vulgar, like if you wind, that's when you say excusez-moi. And so, like, if you're just trying to get past somebody, I think pardon is the correct way to put
it. Wait, am I been all right?
Yeah.
Forgiveness.
Yeah.
Forgiveness.
So, like, the excusez-moi, like, we French that up way too much. That's basically, hey, man, I totally just winded next to you, and it's going to be bad. Excusez-moi. But if you, like, if you're walking past somebody and you accidentally bump them real quick, or you're coming close to it, you say pardon. It's fine.
So wait, that's correct. I might have been all right.
Yeah,
you were all right.
Look, it says forgiveness and grace is the second explanation.
Yeah, you were perfectly fine.
Spreading the good news.
Nobody pocketed you because they didn't want to.
Oh, boy, I've been carrying that load for a while.
No, you're good.
They thought you were a Jesus man.
Grace. Forgiveness. Forgiveness. Grace.
Okay.
Forgiveness. Awesome. Grace. Forgiveness. You're just being super nice to everybody.
Dear life from the path. My wife, parentheses, Jennifer, and I just finished a project, and I am so peeved. We usually get along well. That is, until we work together. And then I go from Dr. Jekyll to Mr. Hyde. Classic example.
Oh, buddy.
I spent 25 years in heavy industrial construction. I've also taken classes in woodworking and metal crafts. My wife has no building skills and no knowledge of how to use power tools. Yet, only minutes after we start, she becomes an engineer and starts telling me how to do things. When it happens, I explode with cursing and throwing things. The thing I yell the most often is, if you know how to do it, why do you need me? That is the question.
What?
Wait, that's the end?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's basically just told a story where he's an ape.
Yes.
And not left any questions, except for anyone to go, I agree you're an ape?
Yeah. Wait a minute. So did he say how long they were married?
No.
Okay.
No.
Seriously, like, love your wife. And just go, okay, sweetheart, yeah, here, I get it. Or just stop doing projects with her.
Yeah, listen, this happens at my house. You know, here's the deal. The wife is the idea man. I just put pen to paper and draw up whatever she come up with, right? And sometimes she come up with stuff that just cannot happen. And really, that you don't handle it by throwing crap around. You just say, look, I don't think that's going to work like you think it's going to. Here's where the downside's going to be. And you explain it to her just like you explain everything to everybody else. I don't see any. Why are you throwing things?
Yeah, why do you have absolutely no grace for your wife?
I mean, seriously, do you have this problem with all stuff that makes you angry, or is it just project management with your wife that you heft an iron across the way? I don't understand. Are you looking to defend your behavior or condemn hers? Neither one of this is acceptable.
Yeah, you sound like a terrifying Neanderthal that can't take someone telling him what to do in a way that you think you're better than everyone else. Yeah, you're an elitist because you've been doing it for a long time. You may be correct, but that doesn't mean you don't have patience and love and grace for your wife and go, all right, sweetheart, thank you. I appreciate that. It's just as easy to go, if you're planning on doing exactly what she's going to tell you to do, go, great, thanks, honey, and then just do it. It's easy as that.
So here's the deal. I find this man suspect anyway because, like, I work construction, right? And I would not categorize. I've spent 25 years in heavy industrial construction. You've bulked this phrase up.
Yeah,
to the point where
that?
It sounds like you eat metal and spit nails, and you wear pit bulls' arms.
Yeah. She's working with a power drill, and you're the one who has 25 years of heavy industrial construction.
Yeah, so I've been working heavy, like, gang-style industrial construction, and then I also took a woodworking class and do metal crafts. Okay, look, dude, you're just a handy guy, okay? Just say it for what it is. It's not like you're building a Okinawa missile in your
basement. Exactly. I built a nuclear silo, and I'm really great with birdhouses.
Holy cow. Yeah, so anyway, without you actually asking for advice or a question at all, you know, you're a lifetime boob. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can either do... I don't know how you work with anybody.
Yeah.
Like, is it just your wife in general that you can't collaborate with? Or is this all people of all races, times, and colors? Like, you cannot collaborate with anybody because you have 25 years in heavy industrial construction.
Yeah, no, I would imagine that's the case. No one has just told him because he runs the crane or something. Like, that's probably the deal. When you say you do industrial construction, like, that stuff is segmented out, right? Like, you have a crane man or, like, a pipe man or whatever. Like, you don't, there's not, like, a general dude who builds factories and does, like, all aspects of, like, factory building.
I built that whole thing.
I'm a factory builder.
It took me 25 years on one project, but I built that whole factory.
So, like, if he has skills, like, it might be, he might be heavy industrial work, Like, maybe he runs the crane, but that does not qualify him for almost anything else.
No.
Except for a man that picks other crap up with a big machine.
Yeah, I mean, and don't get me wrong, boys, there's some skill in running the crane.
Oh, sure.
But that don't make you the do-it-yourself bedroom remodeler, right? A crane man. Be a crane man. Sit where you were put, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm an electrician. I don't wander around telling everybody that I build furniture. You know what I'm saying? It's not what I do. If I had to write down a letter to somebody because I wasn't getting along with my life, I would say, look, I spent the last 20 years doing electrical work. You know, she's out of line telling me how to build a lamp. But, like, it does not cross over and say, but I can also build kitchen counters. Well, no, I can't. That's just not what I do. All right, here is Secular's advice. Even though you're the expert, it appears your wife would like to offer some creative input. If you become so volatile that you lose control when working on projects with her, the obvious answer is to refrain from doing them together.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a softer answer than I would have given.
Right.
You should just refrain from being around people until you can straighten yourself up. You act like a boob.
Yeah, you need four dudes to kick the crap out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, your boobery is to the extent that you might need a brassiere.
Hey, so we were talking about this on the way in. It's illegal to have brass knuckles, but is it illegal to have, like, steel knuckles? Are all knuckles illegal?
Can you own extra knuckles? That's the question.
And is it also illegal to put brass knuckles on, say, a chain around your neck so people know, yeah, that's what's up? Because you can't wear them and swing them at people, but can you just put them on a chain and be like, yeah, I own some.
Is it actually illegal to even own them?
I don't know.
I don't think it's illegal to own them. I think it's just the use of that you get into the whole illegal thing.
So
I think it's really fine if you have them.
Hold on a second. I want to share this because I was about to Google it, and I got through, is it illegal? Here are the options. Here are the Google suggestions. Is it illegal to collect rainwater in Iowa? Is it illegal to kill bats in Iowa? Is it illegal to drive barefoot in Iowa? Is it illegal to dumpster dive in Iowa?
No.
Is it illegal to sleep in your car?
Definitely not.
You know what? I'm very excited about the non-violent form of most of those in Iowa. It's not really like, hey, man, is it illegal to murder somebody in Iowa?
Yeah, but
it's just, hey, man, can I go jump in a dumpster real quick?
The guys that are talking about how to commit crimes, they're not Googling it first. They're like,
yeah, that's true.
I'm doing this thing.
Is it okay to rob from banks in Iowa?
Yeah, these are totally, totally like middle-aged crimes. Is it illegal to have a pet fox?
Yeah, this is a 20 to 40-year-old person that's going, hey, man, I got a list of stuff that I really want to do today. I got to check to make sure these are legal in this state.
Wait, these are great. Is it illegal to have, starting with the letter B, is it illegal to have body armor? Is it illegal to have blue lights on your car? Is it illegal to have both earbuds in while driving? Is it illegal to have blue interior lights? Is it illegal to have bolt cutters in your car?
What do you think a locksmith does?
Okay, here we go.
We have a special permit.
We're going to get to the brass knuckles of this thing. Is it illegal to have brass knuckles in Iowa? We'll start with Iowa.
Man, a lot of people have been asking this thing.
This guy says, here's this question. I got a BA pair of gold knuckles for Christmas. he said the full thing. But my stepdad told me that they're illegal to have since they are deemed a concealed weapon. So does this mean I can't even own them? He says, I'm not going to go around breaking jaws with things. I just think they look BA. Please include some source of confirmation. I tried to Google the answer, but to no prevail.
Allie G walking around with sweet yellow shades, some gold chains, and brass knuckles.
Boy, this is a weird guy. I hope someone can help me before I land my bum in the slammer. Like, he said BA full words, but bum when I land my bum in the slammer.
I mean, what guy goes around pending Google advice says, well, until I hear the right answer, I'm wearing these knuckles?
Cop pulls you over. Hey, man, I didn't get my Google answer answered yet. So Yahoo hasn't come back, and Ask Jeeves isn't even reliable anymore. So
I erred on the side of, I don't care.
Yeah, I erred on the side knuckles. Of, hey, man, these are BA.
What if I wear them on my feet? Then can I have them about?
Brass toe knuckles?
Here we go. Technically, here's the best answer. Technically, it is legal for you to own them as long as they are carried in the confines of your own home or on private property that you possess. Iowa does not do a very good job of clarifying this, as they do not expressly mention brass knuckles or anything like them in the wording of their laws. What is this?
Wait, stuff you own, like your pants? Or my hand?
Okay, so here's...
His hand is my hand.
Here's the law. Chapter 724.4, subsection 1 says, except as otherwise provided in this section, a person who goes armed with a dangerous weapon concealed on or about the person, or who, within the limits of any city... Isn't everything within the limits of a city? Goes armed with a pistol or revolver,
the county,
or any loaded firearm of any kind, whether concealed or not, or who knowingly carries or transports in a vehicle a pistol or revolver commits an aggravated misdemeanor.
Yeah, okay, so the way that reads, like, they're pretty much concerned about concealed pistol and revolvers, but, like, as long as I don't conceal that I got brass knuckles, I can have them.
So you can have a brass knuckle necklace.
Yeah, I can wear a t-shirt that says, I got the brass knuckles on, and have two arrows pointing out towards my loaded firearms. Yeah. We'll call them fists. And then I'm cool. I'm legal.
Yeah, I would say that unless the state offers a permit to wear brass knuckles, like it would offer you the ability to carry a firearm, then it shouldn't fall under the statutes because it doesn't give you any way to carry one with a permit.
I totally want to go to a county building and just be like, hey, I'd like to apply for a permit to hold brass knuckles. Like, excuse me? It's like, I think these look real BA. And I like to be on the right side of the law here now. I like to look like I don't care about the right side of the law, but I really do.
Here's just a suggestion for people thinking about this now. If you don't know how to use brass knuckles, I wouldn't wear them, because you're just begging for people to come and tip you over like a cow and take your brass knuckles. You know what I'm saying? Like, you better know how to run them.
Wait a minute.
Hey, man, you just threw a punch.
Wait a minute. There's an actual court here. A defendant challenges the factual basis supporting his guilty plea for carrying weapons. His sentence was vacated. Hold on.
Wait a minute. Did he have the brass knuckles?
Here we go. Jason Eaton kept brass knuckles in his glove box for personal protection.
What? Yes.
For that conduct, the state charged Eaton with carrying weapons in violation of Iowa Code 724.1, which is what we just read. Eaton entered a written guilty plea admitting he concealed the brass knuckles about his person. On appeal, Eaton challenges the factual basis for his plea, asserting the state did not show the brass knuckles satisfied the definition of dangerous weapon. Eaton contends his counsel was ineffective for allowing him to plead guilty in absence of a factual basis, because nothing in the record shows the brass knuckles in question were capable of inflicting death on a human being. We vacate the sentence and remand for further proceedings.
So as long as you're a pansy that can't throw a punch, no worries.
Hey man, that's 2015. Jason, man, hey.
His first lawyer was awful. His second one was great.
We should have him on the show. I want to know more about his case.
Hey, Brass Knuckles, want to come on?
Yeah, so it looked like he was pulled over for having his license suspended.
Well, no, hold on.
Already a good sign.
He pulled over the Ford Ranger that Eaton was driving because the windshield was cracked. The deputy learned Eaton's license was suspended and asked if Eaton had anything illegal in the vehicle. Eaton revealed there was a set of brass knuckles in the glove box, which the deputy retrieved. He said he had been carrying them around because his ex-girlfriend had been sending her friends after him, and a couple of times they had confronted him in public places. Wait, ladies? He was having brass knuckles to chase ladies away?
Yeah, we need to talk to this fellow.
Okay, so they charged him with an aggravated misdemeanor. He pled guilty.
And then appealed it.
Okay, here it says, while we generally view guilty plea challenges for correction of legal error, when the claim is raised as ineffective assistance of counsel, our view is de novo. I don't know what that is. To prove ineffective assistance, Eaton must demonstrate by a preponderance of evidence that his attorney failed to perform an essential duty, resulting in prejudice, blah, 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 and that it gives the definition of dangerous weapon. Da, 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 da.
Does
the
it
second carry is not relevant because metallic knuckles were removed from the laundry list of dangerous weapons found in the statutory definition before the 1979 code revision.
So in 1979, Iowa said, metallic knuckles, no problem.
Yeah.
Hey, man. And that did just answer our question of, is it only brass knuckles or can I have the steel?
No, you can
use
steel.
It's metallic.
Knuckles. Yeah, if you buy aluminum knuckles, you're a fool.
Oh, this went to the Supreme Court.
I have some tin knuckles.
What?
Our Supreme Court had no trouble concluding brass knuckles fulfill the final part of this test. Unlike a revolver or a knife, which could be used for target shooting or to peel an apple, there is only one purpose for brass knuckles.
Hey, man. They're not taking into account our sweet necklace.
Yeah, what if you like to tap on the table and really have people hear it? You got to have brass knuckles.
Yes, exactly. It's a musical instrument.
Who uses a revolver to peel an apple?
Okay, hold on.
I mean, what kind of gunslinger from the West are you?
A regular Wyatt Earp is like, man, I really want an afternoon snack. Yeah! Six shooter.
I'm pretty sure it was the knife, Mike. Not the gun.
Whatever, man. I use my knife for target practice, and I use my six shooter to peel an apple.
I'm going to have a pear this afternoon. You got to wait.
I have a blunder takes care of my watermelons.
I'm hungry. Fire in the hole. Okay, hold on. This is interesting. It says the court acknowledged some brass. So the question is, can you kill someone with brass knuckles?
Yes.
In essence, answered its own question with, it depends. The court acknowledged some brass knuckles. For instance, an instrument called a wah, in quotes, which featured an embedded razor blade, could be deadly. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
But the court also envisioned metallic knuckles so flimsy they would have little more impact on a victim than bare knuckles. The court decided the question of whether a particular set of brass knuckles was capable of inflicting death was a fact question.
I'm glad the Supreme Court were sitting around going, well, if we hit him with this, it probably wouldn't kill him.
What?
But this would definitely kill him.
What?
So it's kind of, it depends on the guy. Like, is he like 6'2", 250 solid muscles? Or is he like a 110, like, I don't know, like
wait a
two,
minute.
5'7"?
Well, here we go. So our, this is their evaluation of this item. Our record contains no photograph of Eaton's brass knuckles. The brass knuckles were not described in the minutes of evidence or attached law enforcement report. The plea hearing was unreported, so we do not have access to the party's statements. In his handwritten statement on the petition to plead guilty regarding the factual basis for the offense, Eaton did not admit the brass knuckles were capable of inflicting death, nor did he admit more generally that they were a dangerous weapon. On this record, we cannot decipher a sufficient factual basis to uphold Eaton's guilty plea. So basically, short of any photographs, they asked the man, hey, do you think these are dangerous? And he goes, no.
And they went, well,
all
right.
That's about all we got.
We haven't seen them. So.
Yeah. The guy didn't express it right. I could have killed somebody with those knuckles.
You know what I find interesting is I wonder which one of the Supremes would be like, was it a Wyoming knife? You know, I feel like
have
nobody
you seen
on
that sweet
that,
Wyoming knife?
Nobody has any idea what that is, and so they probably called the most rough and tumble dude they know and be like, hey, let me call my cousin in Montana. He's like, it's not one of them Wyoming knives, is it? Well, it might be. Yeah, them are terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, take down anything.
Of Beezer T. Jenkins, we've identified that these brass knuckles will indeed kill a man.
Beezer.
Yep. You could have just taken a poll. Yep, I killed a man with those. Well, then.
Have you ever killed a man with brass knuckles? Nope. Apparently
wait,
not.
That means even the Wyoming knife cannot inflict damage if you're a pansy.
Right.
Like,
do they take into consideration how good you are fighting?
Yeah, wait a minute. Doesn't that beg the question, though, that a gun is not a dangerous weapon if you're a bad shot?
What's your last target practice look like? It was terrible. Nah, it's not dangerous.
That's true. In the
he's
hands
a stormtrooper.
Of a blind man, would they say, look, that shotgun's not dangerous. Hit what he's after.
I would say that's dangerous, but from the perspective of he may not hit what he's looking for, but he'll hit something else.
Right. So, but like, I could make the case, if they wrote me up for attempted murder, I could say, no, officer, actually, I'm a bad shot.
Yeah. I wasn't attempting nothing.
Yeah. Aggravated assault, I'm terrible at
I
fighting.
Just wanted
I don't know
to if fire
right
a shotgun
right.
into the air.
Yeah. I barely hit a pansy.
I'm celebrating a soccer victory, and I pointed it the wrong direction.
Right.
Tricky. Boy, I had no idea.
Oh, we need to talk to this guy.
Boy, we are in luck that Eaton brought this case up against the court last year, though. That really solved some problems.
It did.
Hey,
except for
you're welcome.
Basically, all they said was, look, we never got a look, and no one seemed to care to take a picture of it, so I guess he's free to go. It could have been a Play-Doh knife.
Did they, like, throw it away after the case was done? What do they do with evidence?
It's the laziest bastards I've ever seen.
Seriously. It's probably not sitting in a basket anywhere, so does anybody have a photo of the brass knuckles by chance?
Wouldn't that would be what you ask? Instead of going, hey, look, we need to see this knife, they're like, well, we don't know what it is, and it's probably not this Wyoming knife, so, I mean, it's probably fine.
As long as it doesn't have a razor blade embedded in it, you're good.
Who makes this Wyoming knife? What kind of gruffster hits a dude with the brass knuckles and is like, you know what, this just doesn't have quite the cut and slice damage I was going for.
It's like, I just crushed that guy's skull, but like, I really was looking
Holy
for a bit of a
ball. Hold on, let me get you a photo of this Wyoming knife.
You have the Wyoming knife?
Holy cow.
Okay, hold on.
Hey, man, put it up.
It looks like a mallard.
What?
It looks like a duck.
You're not going to be able to see it up there on the big screen.
Why not?
I don't know. The big screen's not working.
All right, fine. I'm going to Google it.
Yeah, just look at it. It looks, I mean, right, from a way back, it looks like it's a hummingbird.
That brass knuckles, that looks like a whole kitchen utensil.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a Mezzaluna from the subway.
I Googled Wyoming knife. The first thing that came up was Wyoming knife laws. A lot of people want to figure out if they can carry this or not.
I wonder what kind of dude made this thing.
Hey,
you
man,
know
that's
saying?
Sweet.
Like, can you see the low-rent, non-patented versions he's got in his basement where he's, like, taped a razor blade onto a set of brass knuckles and said, yeah,
sweet.
This is going to have some downtown effects.
This guy's, so there's pictures of dudes shucking bison and stuff with it. So, yeah, I mean, it looks
It's like an Oregon Trail kind of deal where, like, you were taking care of a lot of wildlife. You had to have something you could hold on to a little bit better.
Yeah.
So some dude made the Wyoming knife.
Giving it a slice. Have you got anybody had a chopped salad from the Subway?
No.
What?
No, what is it?
No.
You've not had a chopped salad?
Hey, man, do I look like a chopped salad kind of guy?
Hey, get the double chicken chopped salad. It's really good.
Why don't I just get the double chicken sandwich?
The salad's better for you.
Why don't you stop embarrassing yourself?
Anyway, how they chop the salad.
Did you guys get the sweet vinaigrette on your chopped salad?
I do oil and salt and pepper. So anyway.
You're a pansy.
No, but like the Mezzaluna is what they use to chop the salad up, and it looks like this Wyoming knife.
I don't want to talk about this anymore, Ben.
Yeah
seriously, talk about chopped salad.
Here we go. We got one more. Ready?
Yeah. Hey, wait. Hey, actually, do you want to do a quiz? I thought there's a quiz out here on parables since we decided we stink at them.
Oh, no.
Okay. Let's do the
quiz. All right. Here we go. Quick quiz on Jesus' parables. We need an intro.
Hey, man, do we ever get seculars?
Oh, yeah. What was secular's advice on that one?
I threw my phone in disgust. Hang on.
I'm going to have a cashew while you're looking.
Secular's advice.
We need a theme song for this deal?
No.
Yeah, quiz.
We're going to take a quiz.
What was that?
Quiz.
Hey, man, that was Exhibit 1.1. There's a reason that there's going to be like a 1.7 and like a 2.0.
No.
Pop quiz.
No, we read this. Remember, if you become so volatile that you lose control when working on projects, you should refrain from doing them together.
Oh, that's right.
All right, the brass knuckles
came after.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was just a personal inquiry.
We're going to take a Can quiz. I have brass knuckles? Mike, I think we determined it's okay that you have brass knuckles as long as you suck at using them.
I can't afford brass knuckles, but I thought maybe I could make some low-grade steel knuckles.
I made some aluminum foil knuckles. They're awesome.
All right, here we go.
What if a guy wears like 3 rings? Does that...
With a knife on it from Wyoming.
Okay, I got you.
You got a sweet Wyoming knife ring?
Yeah, no, actually, that's a good thought. Like, what is the difference if you just had 3 big rings on you? Made out of brass. Why would you hit with brass? Isn't brass soft?
Yeah.
So why do people use brass?
And that was just used at the time?
It's dense. I think it's dense, so it doesn't bounce. Like, it absorbs all of it, so you get the full brunt.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
Brass knuckles.
Oh, okay.
Howdy-ho.
All right, here we go. Dear quiz from the path. Number one, what happened to the man in the parable who had a bumper crop? Bumper crop?
A bumper crop? What?
Okay. Here we go. A, he built bigger barns. He died. He donated more for the poor. He gave a party. He built bigger barns because he was going to store it up.
Yeah, but didn't he die before the barns were completed?
I don't think that's the same parable.
Oh.
No, that's
crap,
the
man.
Yeah, that's the guy late. Yeah, I think it's the bigger barns.
All right.
What does a bumper crop mean?
Big crop.
Yeah, he got
better
a big crop.
Normal.
Yeah, so we wanted
the
more.
Bumper
place
is
to
just
store.
Big?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, all right, cool.
What was to happen to the tares, weeds that grew up among the wheat? They were ground up with the wheat. They were cast into the sea. They were burned up. They were abandoned with the wheat field.
Burned up.
Burned.
They get separated from the chaff and thrown into burn pile?
I think
they were gathered with the...
And then put it and then to be burned. Yeah. They're burned up. What did the man find hidden in a field so that he sold all he had to buy that field?
A treasure.
A pearl, a gold chest, a treasure, a bag of coins.
The pearl was the merchant, I thought, not the guy in the field.
Treasure.
We think he's got a treasure.
It's either chest or treasure. I think it was just treasure.
I don't think it's a gold chest. That's a little pirate.
Found a chest of golden doubloons.
That I got out my Wyoming knife, whittled my way
People
in.
Are like, hey, man, is Jesus talking about pirates right now? All right, treasure, yeah.
Let's see. How much did the landowner pay each man for working in his vineyard for one day?
One denarius.
One denarius, 5 minas, 2 pieces of silver.
One denarius.
Yeah, denarius. How many of the virgins did not have enough oil for their lamps? 4, 5, 6, or 7?
I say 5.
All right, man, I don't know any of these.
Yeah, they split. Is it 5?
I think it's 5.
There were 10 virgins. 5 mm-hmm. were ready, 5 were not?
I think it's 5.
Let's go with 5. The man who received 5 talents from his master earned how many more? 2, 5, 10, or 12?
Man who received 5?
Yeah, he got 5 talents.
I think he doubled it. I think it's 5 more.
He earned 5 more, not 10 more.
Yeah, 5
right.
more.
5 more, okay. What seed is described as the smaller than all the others but becomes
mustard.
Greater? Yeah, I agree, mustard. Gourd, elm, or mustard?
Not fig.
That's not a seed, is it? Don't you plant the fig? I don't know.
In a fig tree, man.
Isn't the fig the seed?
Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Well, wouldn't that be called a fig seed?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like a pear. The seed is a pear. You don't plant the whole pear. Dummy.
I'm not hearing what you're saying. 8. Which of the following did the father not give to the prodigal son upon his return? Robe, ring, necklace, sandals.
Necklace. No.
Okay,
robe and ring were definite.
We got robes and rings. So we either got necklace or sandals.
Did he give him new sandals?
No, sandals, yeah. It's necklace.
Yeah, he didn't give him a necklace. He gave him the robe, the ring, and new sandals.
Okay, all right. Number 9. What did the merchant sell to buy the one pearl of great price?
Everything he owned.
10 smaller pearls. All that he had. His golden ring or a parcel of land.
All that he had.
All that he had. Wait, but are you sure? Isn't that the guy that bought the field?
Yeah, he went and sold all that he had so he can go back and buy the field.
This is the question of who buys the pearl.
Oh.
What did the merchant sell to buy the one pearl?
I think it's still all that he had. I think they were both all that he had.
Sure. Oh, this is making me feel nervous on this one. 10. How many coins did the woman have before she lost one? 10, 11, 20, or 99?
10.
Yeah, 10.
Yeah, it was 10. Yeah. 99's a sheep. Oh, man.
And that's a lot of coins.
Oh.
So I don't care about the one.
It's going to be rough.
Oh, yeah. I think we're in a real pickle here. What happened to the... Oh, no. What man happened to the man who had a bumper crop? We said he built bigger barns. That is incorrect.
Yeah.
He died.
What?
Yeah, see?
Oh, all right. Well, point to Mike.
Hold on. This always shows up in the KJV. Here we go. And he spake...
He spake.
The Bible in basic English. And he said to them in a story, the land of a certain man of great wealth was very fertile. He said to himself, what is to be done? For I have no place in which to put all my fruit. This I will do. I will take down my storehouses and make greater ones, and there I will put all my grain and my goods. Isn't that what we said?
No.
No. Yeah,
but that is what we said. Is like he did both of those. He tried to build bigger barns.
But then he died.
And then he died. But
yeah, we missed the moral of that story.
Yeah, they're saying the whole point was the man died.
Yeah, no, but God said to him, tonight I will take your soul from you. He didn't build the bigger barns. He intended to build the bigger barns, but instead he died.
Gotcha.
Yeah, correct.
He should have just given away crop.
That's kind of caveat.
Two, what was to happen to the tares and weeds that grew up among the wheat? They were burned up. That was correct. What did the man find hidden in a field so that he sold all he had to buy that field? We said a treasure. That is correct. How much did the landowner pay each man for working in his vineyard for one day? We said one denarius. That is correct. How many of the virgins did not have enough oil for their lamps? We said five. That is correct.
Ooh.
The man who received five talents from his master earned how many more? We said five. That is correct. What seed is described as smaller than all the others but became greater? The answer is mustard, and they certainly would have planted the whole fig. That's why that one's not right. And that was correct. Eight. Which of the following did the father not give to the prodigal son? We said necklace. That is correct. What did the merchant sell to buy the one pearl of great price?
Come on.
We said all that he had. That is correct.
Yeah.
How many coins did the woman have? She lost one. We said 10. That is correct.
Woo!
That we answered 9 out of 10 questions correctly for a score of 90%.
Bam!
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey,
that's pretty sweet living.
Yeah, that's pretty good, because the quiz has been taken 55,000 times, since April 16th of 2003, and the average score for the quiz is 66%.
Rock on. We know our parables. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think we nailed that one.
We took the brass knuckles of that one.
Legally.
All right, hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. We very much appreciate it. If you need to get a hold of us, shoot us an email, info@livefromthepath.org, and visit the website during the week, livefromthepath.org, for past clips from the show and performances by such folks as Light 45. Hey, Ted Yoder's out there. His Eleanor Rigby is, he's still rocking up the charts. He's an Esquire. Esquire.com just posted something with him.
I saw that.
Yeah. Congratulations,
you,
to Ted. He's rocking,
yeah,
man. Anyway, all that stuff's out on the website, livefromthepath.org. In the meantime, the means, God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.